Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, July the 29th, 2014. We apologize for the delay in getting on for some reason. Blog Talk had us down that we weren't to start the show until tomorrow. So that happened to us again yesterday, so we're checking to see what the holdup is there. So hopefully that'll be the end of that happening. But we welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and we welcome everybody. We're just delighted and honored that you're with us to participate in this, bringing forward the ancient understanding of how this energy system called a human body and mind works, how a human being works, and in particular, how to remove from the structure whatever does not belong in the structure through an ancient technology and tool called forgiveness. And it truly is a technology. If you don't understand how this device, it's a very sophisticated electronic device, works, then you're not going to have much luck in getting it to work for you. If you don't know where the power button is on the cell phone, it's going to be really hard to make calls. If you don't know how to open the screen and swipe it, just that simple thing. If you don't have any clue that you have to swipe the screen to open your phone, it's going to be really difficult to make phone calls. You perhaps can hear the birds in the background. I'm actually sitting on our deck. We have a beautiful, probably about a 75-degree sunny day in the Ozarks. It's absolutely gorgeous. So some kind of a bird just gave us a little song, if you heard it in the background. In any event, some exciting news. Actually, it's been a couple of days now, but we are just delighted and excited that we've finally gotten the printing back. We finally completed the editing. I guess I should make it accurate. The editing part has been my finally, and the printing came pretty quickly. But we finally have why is this happening to me again? I wish I were complete with that. That's a process and a big project. But we have Rossities now available. It's turned into a really beautiful 260-page book. You can take a look at the cover. There are 260 pages of just awesome information. We've put together just a huge compendium of data and information about food, anything from how the heat works in hot peppers to what to do with olive oil, to recognize that, in this country today, there's more money made with scam false olive oil than there is with cocaine. More money made with that illegal operation where people think when they're buying extra virgin olive oil, but many very well-respected companies, some of them in the health food industry, huge companies are selling what they're calling pure virgin olive oil, and it's actually things like cheap hazelnut oil with a little bit of olive oil in it and conning the public. So anyway, there's information on buying olive oil. There's just this huge array of information, food combining, parasites in food, how to clean your food, and recipes, hundreds of pages of the favorite recipes from over the last 25 years from Chef Ari and a few other folks who helped to develop the recipes here at Heartland. And so that's available online if you want to get a copy. And we've got the latest version of Enlightenment from the Kabir's manuscript, the Kabir's being a copy of the oldest known New Testament in the original Aramaic language. It goes back to 164 A.D., and so what we've published so far from that manuscript is now available in a book called Enlightenment, which is also now, Jeannie got it up on the website yesterday. And then Julie did a significant amount, Julie Haverstick, did a significant amount of editing on her book, Healing Children, Loving Children, for this new edition. And so we've got Healing Children, Loving Children available in its latest version and format, also available on the website, and congratulations, Julie, on putting that together. And so we're delighted to have those, and if there's anyone who has pre-ordered those and hasn't received them, we'll be shipping them out on Monday. So they should be in your hands within the week. So it's a privilege to have those available and be able to get them out to people who are ready for some new information and moving in a different direction. And, of course, the core of the information we're working on from the Aramaic language is the principle and the tool of forgiveness. And in recognizing how that forgiveness process operates, the basic tool that we teach is that of how to go inside of yourself and access the things that create turmoil and trauma within you, and how to literally remove those things from your structure. As opposed to what the culture tends to do is tell us that if we're in pain or turmoil, of course it's all somebody else's fault, so you just forgive them. They made you mad. They made you sad. They made you afraid. Well, it was that situation that upset you. Or it was when that happened, that disturbed you. And that, frankly, is all a total, complete, 100% fraud and lie. It's just not true. Why am I hurt? Why am I sad? Why am I mad? Why am I upset? Because inside of me is hurt, sad, mad, or upset. And guess what? Hurt, sad, mad, or upset doesn't belong in a human form. It's a disease. And our structure, every time those energies are resonated in us by events in the world, our structure tries to inform us by making us aware of our pain and turmoil, that there's something offending the tissue, something in the tissue structure that doesn't belong there. But we have this device that we use to keep hidden from ourselves the fact that that very thing which we've been through 87 different times with 42 different people is something that's going on inside of us. And though we want to blame all those 42 different people, sooner or later we have to recognize we're the only one that was there every time it happened. This is about me. And when I realize that it's about me, then I can undo my denial. The core of the problem, in terms of hiding it from ourselves, is that our culture has taught us to live in total, complete denial. Denial looks like this. When I think a thought, or I speak a word that says, you made me, then whatever follows, mad, sad, afraid, angry, rageful, hurt, whatever follows, which is something inside of me, that's the lunch bell ringing, we're in the middle of an intensive, and so an awesome meal is being put out as we speak. But we'll do the radio show instead. So when I think or speak as though what's going on inside of me, what my physiology is producing, dissociate from that which causes my pain, my turmoil, my rage, my guilt, my grief, my sadness. When I can open You know, in the ancient teachings, they talked about the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. They were not talking about a purple curtain in a church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. If you want to put an end to pain and turmoil in your life, you're going to have to open the veil of your temple. And sitting around telling everybody else how they made you mad, sad, glad, or afraid isn't going to cut it. If there's something going on inside of you that causes you pain, then you have the responsibility to find that which is inside of you. When you talk about your children as though they were the cause, oh, Charlie, you really made me mad when you did that. What you're saying to your mind is mind? Go to my trial on my child, Charlie, and hallucinate me. Cook me up a reality, a picture that shows me that Charlie is the cause of me being mad. And now my mind will literally hallucinate a picture, an image. And it'll kind of look like Charlie, so I'll be sure that it must be all Charlie's fault when I'm feeling what I'm feeling. But you notice that Charlie is 7 years old. Think back 8 years ago. You're blaming on your child, Charlie. Notice that you knew it years before you ever knew Charlie existed, years before Charlie came into the world, or your spouse, or your friend, or your enemy, for that matter. And once you realize that, begin to undo your denial. And as you undo your denial, you then are able to access directly and correctly the contents of your mind that causes your pain, that causes your disorders and your diseases. And when you access those things and remove them, the removal process is called forgiveness. We're not going to go through the whole process right now. Actually, if you want to access that, if that's an idea that interests you or intrigues you, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and you'll see a bullseye in the middle of the page. If you click on that bullseye, that target, that will open a whole series of links, and that series of links will tell you all about the forgiveness process, how to do it. There are at least a dozen free radio shows where there are MP3s linked there where you can go in, just right-click on those, save them on your computer, put them on your iPhone or your iPod or your Android phone or your whatever phone or your MP3 player or listen to them on your computer. And there are full sets of instructions, at least a dozen different sets. And the reason why we put a dozen different sets up there is because each time you listen in each process that somebody goes through, and there are each live shows where we walk somebody through the process, you'll build different understanding. You'll build different brain cells for how this awesome process called forgiveness works and how to access the hidden parts of your mind. Not necessarily the easiest task in the world, because probably the hidden parts of your mind are the same parts that one or both of your parents hid from themselves. Maybe, like you're blaming Charlie, they're blamed you when you were a child. They blamed you for what they knew long before they ever met you. Maybe they blamed each other for the upsets and disturbances that, you know, as a husband and wife, they had those upsets and disturbances long before they ever met. And it becomes a generational pattern. When we can own that, we can change that. If you can't own it, you can't change it, and there's always going to be somebody to blame it on, because whoever shows up to trigger it in you, whoever resonates those brain cells, if you're in denial of those brain cells, you cannot directly see the content of your own mind. In denial, you only see the content when it's projected or made into pictures of somebody else. And so the forgiveness process is how to collapse those pictures, how to open that veil, that barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious, and how to clean out the content that never belonged. It's an absolutely awesome process. And we're here to share it with you. You can go to the website. All the information is free. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of radio shows where we've dealt with and talked about just about every issue under the sun. And let us at this moment express appreciation in particular for Magda and Susan and Susan and Tony for all the effort and energy they've put in, and everyone who's helped to write descriptions for those radio shows. If you would like to be of some support, and you look at the archives of our radio show and you listen to one that doesn't have a description, it would be awesome if you'd write a short description, especially if you're a good writer. It'd be nice to have some people who have good writing skills, good talents, who could support Magda. I know that with the farm going and all, and she's definitely got lots going on, and she's in an intensive with us right now in the codependence communication practice. And if someone's out there that has some good writing skills, it'd be awesome to have you support us and write some of those descriptions, listen to the show and share them with us so that people can go back through the archives and have more of a sense of what's in each show so that when topically looking, one can kind of get a sense of what topics are addressed in that particular show. So that support would be awesomely appreciated. And in the meantime, our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Is Dr. Kim with us today?
Yes, he is, and he's on.
Dr. Kim, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Fabulous.
A beautiful day, and listening to the early part of the show just resonated the brain cells in me about perception and how active our perceptual process is, and how most of us are conditioned to believe that it's really passive, that if we just sit and open our eyes, we see everything that's in front of us accurately, and that we see it exactly as everybody else sees it. And I was with our friend Rex once a while back, and the phrase came to me, "Oh, the tangled web we weave when first we practice to perceive."
Yes, that's a good one. That's excellent.
And, you know, it put me in mind of doing a presentation on Saturday and bringing up that page from the CIA website that had the chapter of a book on it titled, "Why Can't We See What Is There to Be Seen?" And it studies and the research that prove how active our perceptual process is and demonstrate how once we come to a conclusion about what's in front of us, it's very difficult for us to let go of that conclusion, even when we're presented with contradictory evidence. And if the government knows it and uses it, it's probably important for us as individuals to be aware of that and use it to our advantage.
For sure. For sure. And what the world doesn't teach us about our perceptual system is how to tweak it so that it's accurate. And I find it really interesting that 2,000 years ago, very important, in fact, the most important idea that Yeshua or tool or law that Yeshua gave when they asked him, "What's most important in all this law you're teaching us?" was about how to keep perception clean. It's interesting. The way a lot of the religions go, it's got to do with, you know, what's really important is making sure everybody believes like you do. Or making them know how inferior they are if they don't. It's an interesting game. But and they said, "What's most important in the law?" And it's kind of hard to tell that he was talking about perception from the way the Greeks translate it, because what he says is, at least ostensibly, according to the translations that include through the Greek, is, well, you must love the Creator and your neighbor as yourself. At least that's how it's spoken through most of the English translations. But if we go to the Aramaic, what we find is that the key factor in perception is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that in Aramaic was called rahma. That's the word they translated as love, but it doesn't have anything to do with what our culture calls love. He was saying, here's the main tweaker for your perception to make sure that it's accurate. And if you maintain this condition in your mind, then you will, when you are in the presence of the Creator or thinking about the Creator, when you are in the presence of or thinking about a neighbor, and an Aramaic neighbor means anybody that you think about, then you will maintain your human life, is what it says. It doesn't say love God, neighbor, as self, but rather maintain this condition of love in your mind, rahma, when you think of the Creator, when you think of anybody, and you'll be maintaining your human life. Far, far cry from loving God, neighbor, and self. And it's interesting, I've heard people rail on, you know, how ridiculous is a religion that tells people to love their neighbor? You know, you got this neighbor that's after you with an axe. How ridiculous it is to love them. And it just shows the ignorance of the mind that has no clue what was actually being said. And in fact, cancel the thought. But if you had a neighbor after you with an axe, that'd be the most important one to have your perception sharp for. Because in that sharpened perception, in that accurate perception, you're always going to get the highest and best guidance to determine what behavior is going to be the best for you. And so that's the whole process of the tweaking of perception, or at least, pardon me, the key that Yeshua gives in doing that. So how's that fit for you, Dr. Kim?
There.
Are you with us, Sam?
Are you there? Yeah.
I am.
It fits beautifully, and it really is one of the things that helps me use these tools so effectively in therapy is that talking about perception and the need to keep perception crisp and clear and how I only really do that when I have a calm, focused, and accepting presence about me, rather than if I have anger or fear or tension or if I'm resisting something, that I can't really get a good picture of what's going on, and then I can't really figure out how to respond well. And so, you know, to be able to present that to people in therapy from the perceptual perspective is a real powerful tool. And to know that we don't have to believe what somebody said or wrote about it. We can just try it out. And I love the exercise you do in some of your presentations where you ask people to think about anything from their past that they did that they now regret doing, and then think about the feeling they had when they were doing it. And almost without fail, people say things like anger, fear, sadness, guilt, rage, vengeance. And I now say almost without fail, because the last time I did that exercise, two of the five people or six people listening said what they felt was excitement when they did what they now regret doing. And so we teased that out a little bit, and effectively what they came to was they were feeling that over-the-top excitement. They were feeling completely off-the-charts excitement, which, you know, we just bonded into the idea that, okay, if you're feeling too much of anything, you know, if I fall in love with somebody so passionately that I don't care about anything rational and I go out trying to impress this person and buy a mansion on a hill and a sports car that I can't afford to pay for, I might later regret that, and then I come back and say, well, what were you feeling when you did these things? I might say, well, you know, passion, love, excitement, but it really has no bearing on being balanced and focused. And what you're meaning when you say the word love in this context, it's not that passionate obsessive kind of excitement. So it fits very well for me, and it has helped me bring these tools to more and more people without having the distorting filter of a religious belief system in the way.
Yeah, my take would be the person who says excitement, I would be probably, if they did something they regretted out of it, I'd be investigating with them what was behind the excitement, because I'll bet they were buzzed on an internally produced drug, probably based in fear. And that's what created what they called excitement. And if that's the case, then the real feeling that motivated the behavior was the fate, the feeling of fear. I would suspect that would be more of what they were dealing from. Would that make sense in that context with those two particular cases?
Well, probably. We didn't get into it. It was a more of a business setting, and we didn't have people delineate what they thought or what they had done at the time that they now regret, but I'm sure it would have gone that way. It made a lot of sense to them when I talked about, you know, I have a logical side of my mind and I have an emotional side of my mind, and I make my best decisions in life when I've got good access to both of those. And whenever my emotional intensity, whether it's positive or negative, goes from a zero or a one, up to about a 6.5 or a 7 on a scale of 0 to 10, where 10 is the most intense it can be, when I get up there at that 6.5 or 7, maybe 8 for some people, my logic is offline. It's riding in the back of the bus where it can't reach the logic, I'm sorry, the wheel or the pedals. And my logic is just along for the ride, and that intense emotion is going to have its way, and I don't make very good decisions from that perspective. And unless and until my emotional intensity comes back down to a 3 or a 4 or in that range, my logic can't come back online. My logic can't really be useful in making decent, balanced decisions. And when I presented it that way, they all agreed that made real good sense. And that was probably what was happening for those two people who said they were feeling really excited when they did something that they now regret doing.
Oh. Cool. Well, it's to me, it's just an amazing, awesome piece of information and points to the truth of what Yeshua taught, which many have taken as the things they abused and turned inside out and backwards until the original teaching was lost. And this thing, how many people have suffered over believing that that you were supposed to have this warm, fuzzy feeling for somebody who's beating on you. You know, how many wives have accepted that? How many husbands have accepted that? Somebody who's literally physically beating on them, and but I'm supposed to love them, so I'll just keep that warm, fuzzy feeling going, and, you know, people have ended up dead over that one, and it doesn't even start to relate to what Yeshua taught. There's so much that's been lost, and that's where we're working to restore the original Aramaic understanding of these teachings so that we can really, truly function fully as human beings, that this body-mind unit, you know, it's like without an owner's manual, it's really tough to make the device live properly. And when we start looking at those ancient scriptures in their original context, with their original meaning, as they were originally spoken, we don't have a religious text. We've gone, no, too. Here's how you make the device work, folks. And it's going to be lousy as a director of your behavior if you function out of hostility and fear instead of the active presence of a creature called Rakuma, the active presence of love in your mind. And it's that active presence of love that's going to support you really truly living as a human being. And for anyone who's new to the show, we have an experiential definition for a human being: hold the newborn child. If you hold the newborn, you know exactly what that newborn energy is. Everybody all over the planet, when we ask that question, the corollary question to how many have ever done something you regret is how many have held a newborn, and what was your experience of the essence of the newborn? Everybody's answer, absolutely universally, is some variation on the theme of love. And to recognize that active presence of love is the truth of who we are, and we only have a body-mind unit that functions properly when we have that active presence of love happening in us, called Rachman and Aramaic. Take things to a whole other level. The exciting thing about the Enlightenment book, as I see it, one of the most exciting things in there, and I've spent many hours sitting down and doing translation work longhand from the first century dictionary in the back. So the book is made up of three parts. There's an introduction to the manuscript, you know, its history, where it was found, that sort of thing. And then there are some passages from the New Testament, kind of left in their original King James sort of format, but in brackets, the key words are left in Aramaic, and then in the back of the book, the third section, there's the first century dictionary. So you can go back and look at what was that Aramaic mind thinking when it spoke a particular word. And the word Rachma is the most important key impacting the tweaking up and the keeping of perception, your window on the world at its highest and best. And obviously, if you're not getting your highest and best, you know, if you've got a television set and the picture's snowy and you can hardly hear it, you know, the slipping sideways and going all over the place, you call in a repair person and say, what's most important to make my television work properly? He's going to say, well, you've got to have a proper signal, so let's go look at that antenna. If you don't have a proper signal fed from the frontal lobes of the brain to the rest of the device, it's going to be just like that television set with no proper signal. And, you know, it's monumental to understand that and then to put it into practice is a practice, and just makes for such huge shifts and changes in people's lives. It's amazing. So let's check with Jeannie and see if Jeannie has anybody with a hand up in the phone queue and or anybody in the chat room with a question or a thought for us. Jeannie?
Nope, it's all quiet on the home front. Nobody has their hand up. And I had to reboot my computer, but there's still nobody with their hand up, and just general hello conversation in the chat room.
Okay, well, if there's anybody in the chat room that's a guest, you can do a very quick registration process. I think Blog Talk sends an email back to you to confirm your email address, and they keep it all private. And that allows you to chat in the chat room. If you're just a guest, unfortunately, they don't allow you to chat, so there's nothing you can do in the way of input. But if you do just that short, brief registration process, then you'll be able to talk in the chat room if you have questions or anything to share with us. And, of course, our call-in number is 646-200-4169 if you're one of those guests or in the chat room, or to run one of the radio stations that we don't have direct access to and can't see on our control panel. If you call into that number and you have a question for us, you just push 1 and put your hand up. Jeannie, through the magic of electronics on her computer, watches your hand go up and introduces yourself. Without any waiting, if you have a question for us, and, you know, I guarantee that if Dr. Tim and I were in your hometown doing a workshop series at some kind of a local center, and we just had the conversation that we just had from the platform, and we came down and were walking off the stage, you'd come over to us and say, well, what about, or how does this work? What's this have to do with it? How does this fit? Would you have one of those questions if we had just had this conversation? If so, push 1.
ask your question.
And okay, we have a question.
Oh, great. Go for
we
it.
We have a question in the chat room, and we also have a hand up. The question in the chat room is, can you do worksheets on your own character traits? And Lisa's in there, and she said, of course you can, but if you could answer that, and then we'll take the caller.
Yes, absolutely, on your own character traits. Let's say that there's a defect. I was talking to someone this morning about the way they used evidence. You know, there's some interesting Harvard research that says in this time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that can get into conscious awareness was 9 bits. And the person I was speaking to this morning, it was about an issue where an event had happened in the not-too-distant past, and the explanation of the event was just a simple explanation of the event. Here's what happened. But then a week or so later, when there were different goals involved, the explanation of the event wasn't the same. All of a sudden, it became something that supported an outcome that they wanted. And we talked about the Aramaic beatitude, one of the beatitudes properly translated from the Aramaic. The long form of what it says is that a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. You who engage in just and fair behavior between people. And so bringing that beatitude into the conversation as well, notice that a week ago your explanation for the event was this, and you had no attachment or no thought of an outcome. It was just was the reason for the event. But then all of a sudden, because just and fair behavior perhaps isn't active in your mind, you want to create a specific outcome. So the event now is explained totally differently. In fact, the original person that was the whole explanation was based on, you know, a certain event happened, and the explanation was this person did this. And a week later, and what I offered was, perhaps your mind is showing you different evidence because you want a different outcome. You want something to happen as a result of that event. And so notice that you don't even mention the original explanation. You don't mention the person involved in the original explanation. You now have a totally different explanation for the event. And that totally different explanation supports you getting something that you want. So just notice, and is that really just and fair behavior? So if one were to come to the conclusion, I didn't realize I did that with my mind, or that my mind was programmed that way, but now that I see that, I realize that maybe I'm not as just and fair as I think I am. So I could put number 1A, my name. 1B would be, I notice that I change evidence in order to justify what I want. Number 1C, the feeling might be guilty. The thought might be, I'm not fair. And I didn't even know it. Then going down the list to the goal would be, gee, I really want to be in integrity. Then, so that would be number 3. And number 4, I reset love in my mind. Number 5, I cancel my need to be in integrity. And then I look at what was under the surface. And, you know, something that might surface in that situation might be, and you know, the outcome that was wanted was an outcome that would bring more money into someone's pocket. Oh, so I change the evidence my mind uses in order to force somebody else to put money in my pocket where it really doesn't belong. But the way I tell the story the week later has them, if they're vulnerable to guilt, has them feeling a little guilty, and they'll put the money in my pocket. Gee, I didn't realize that my mind did that. Wow, what an insight. So I'm going to cancel the goal to be just and fair. And as I cancel that goal, what happens is I open the file in my mind on justness and fairness, and I get to look directly at the content in that file. And I see that, you know, sometimes I fudge things a little bit because I've got poverty stuff going on and I need money. So my poverty mindset creates me moving out of justice and fairness. Oh, cool. Now that I've got my mind at that might be my next worksheet around poverty. So, you know, so that might be what a worksheet might look like on a character trait in that regard. So once I've canceled my goal, then I invite Rooka to support me in opening and letting go of that and then forming a new goal. And the new goal for myself in that case might be, you know, to be truly, totally just and fair and even generous with people. And that would tend to create a different outcome for me. It would tend to bring healing to that arena where there's some poverty energy. And when I choose to be generous, all of a sudden the world says, oh, generosity, okay, we can play that game, and starts to bring it back. So that might be what that worksheet might look like. So I hope that serves you and supports you. And then you've got
awesome.
you got somebody
yes.
with a question?
And a hand up is area code 541. You're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, I bet this is Julie from Oregon.
Yeah, you know, I'm representing the whole state of Oregon.
All right.
Well, at least Ashland. Well, I have an interesting thing to report, which I actually do see as my own reflection. I was resonated and triggered last night, although I did give love to it. I went to a class. I was invited by a friend to go see this woman speak, and she was going to teach us a lot of things, I guess. And she was totally falling apart in the whole presentation because my estimation is that her tools don't work for her anymore, and she can't teach them. And she's got a background in psychology and all kinds of things, and she was talking about Buddhism and shamanic this and that and, you know, everything, just all these tricks of the trade. Now, that was teaching me something, and I've been reading in The Course in Miracles, I am under no laws but God's. It's lesson 76 in the workbook, and, you know, I know you teach the laws of living. And so I've always had since I've been a student of the Course and of you, Michael Rice, your teachings, Yeshua's teachings, I just have a real aversion to anything that sounds like magic or anyone who even uses that word. And I found in this lesson why, because God's laws are so far exceeding anything that we could do with magical tools here. And I think the wiring of relying on magic and lies, basically, I think that wiring is breaking down in our society. So I just, I could read a little of this, but I'm just bringing it up because I'm so wanting to teach. I want to teach the correction, and I want to learn it further. And I just feel, I see myself having lived here in Ashland for 6 years now, and I really see what the state of mind is of the unhealed healer. And there's a huge cry for help for healers who think they're healers to heal. I mean, they're actually really in pain. And so I'm not sure. I mean, I'm doing my worksheets. And so the more I do my worksheets, the faster the movie in front of me changes and shifts, and now there's this to look at, and now there's that to look at. So I guess rather than making any decisions about it, I'm just amazed at what shows up and what it teaches me. And I pretty much have resolved myself to just doing my own work and not worrying about teaching anyone, and know that the work I do is going to do a powerful outcome. You know, it'll ripple out, and meanwhile, it serves me too. So I don't know what you might have to say about that. Yeah.
Well, I'd offer a few things. One is congratulations that you are doing the worksheets and that you're moving to that next level. Two, you may find that the next level of your work to do in order to heal you is going to be to teach it. Sounds like your guidance is moving you there. And, you know, there's a time period when you think of us as energy fields. There's a time period for absorption, and then there's a time period for radiation. The energy going in, absorption, can be really wonderful and beneficial, but there's a totally different thing that happens when we move into radiation, when we radiate that energy. The energy going out the other way, truth, has a whole different impact on absolutely everything. And so you might, as opposed to putting that guidance away, because it sounds like it's guidance coming in, you might really want to look at that. And, you know, the teaching might look like getting the support group started again, or maybe setting up some live workshops and actually teaching it. I don't know. You also had talked about combining the forgiveness work with your piano teaching, so it might fit in that arena. Whatever arena it is, I just encourage you, if that's what guidance is coming in, that you perhaps listen to that, and that might be the next level of your learning and your service to the world. And then I suggest the one word in your whole conversation that to me stuck out as having the most energy behind it was aversion. Mm-hmm. And so some worksheets on aversion might be useful. And that might show you a different part of your mind that could use a little bit of tweaking.
Well, thank you for catching that. And fear, for sure, I really have a lot of fear lately. Just fear of, you know, I had this viewpoint, the way I've been delivering information lately has been like as a know-it-all, which I do know, I do, but so this know-it-all thing, and I did a worksheet on shame, the dealing with shame, and I'm ashamed to know what I know, and so that's getting in the way of teaching.
That's just projection.
You know,
That's just projection. That's projection.
Okay.
I'm ashamed to know what I know.
Mm-hmm.
So you're projecting that into your brain's image of someone who knows, and so it might be worth doing some worksheets around maybe childhood where you knew something and you were shamed for it. Someone, you know, wants to inspire you towards shame. But, you know, there's no reason in the universe, because you know something, for shame, except that your mind has shame in it. And so it projects it into this circumstance or that circumstance. And so I would offer that to another worksheet topic and a place to let loose of that projected shame. And get rid of it. Get it out of your tissue structure. That's the unhealing healer part. That's the part of you that has some compassion for others who don't have the knowledge. And another place perhaps where you can serve.
And you said the mind has what? Because that word didn't come through to me. The mind has something. Oh, I lost it. Oh, well.
Compassion. Compassion for others.
Okay, maybe that was it. Yeah. Okay, so, yes, and speaking of body tissues, I have had a rash going on. It comes and goes, and I'm not sure if it's something I'm eating or whatever, but I re-listened to your naturopathic DVD, and I got some insight there to change what I'm doing and approach it differently. So, yeah, I'm getting a lot of guidance to get out there and do something with this work and keep doing it myself, too. And so I guess I get to just keep looking at the barriers, and I'll get there when I get there, you know. But I think I'm going to call this lady and invite her to just sit down and chat with me and maybe come be in my support group, which I do have a few people lined up wanting to be in it, so I just need to set it up and do it. So maybe that's the next step.
Go for it. You got my support.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Bless you. Thank you for the call.
All right. Yeah, you're welcome. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
646-200-4169 is our calling number. If you've got a question for us, based in looking at this forgiveness process and all of the corollary tools that we teach, we'd love to hear your voice. Push 1, and you'll be in the phone queue to ask your question. So, Gene, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anyone with a hand up in the phone queue?
No hands up. And we were just talking in the chat room, around that same subject, is that it always opens us up to a different level to learn as we're teaching. You know, as Richard Bach says, we teach best what we most need to learn. And it just is a totally different vibration. And if you want to take your learning to a next level, then teaching is the best way to do that.
Yes, for sure. Awesome. So if you've got a question, no waiting in the phone queue, push 1. We're here to support you. How can we support you? 646-200-4169. We're down to about 5 minutes, so we'd love to hear your questions and your thoughts. Beyond that, again, we do have the new Enlightenment, Healing Children, Loving Children, and Rossipes, a whole new edition. Rossipes used to be a little book with about, 50 or 60 pages in it. It's now, we've got 3 years of edits. It's up to 260 pages, those who've been waiting. We'll be shipping it out on Monday, and I think you'll be delighted because instead of the book that you bought, which was half the size, it's not available. So we'll be getting those out of the post office on Monday and getting them into your hands. So, Jean, what's happening?
I think it's really quiet here.
Okay. Well, let me just share the schedule for the rest of the summer here at Heartland. If you're ready to take your work to the next level, then you might want to just check on Why Again, whyagain.org, and take a look into the intensive schedule that we've got going on. We're just finishing up. We've got another 5 or 6 days left in codependence communication practicum. And then we'll be doing a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive starting Monday, August 4th. So go from the 4th through the 12th, and in that workshop we'll do a whole series of workshops. We'll do Why Is This Happening to Me Again, Healing Through Relationships, Communication, Did You Hear What I Think I Said, Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, Empowered to Heal, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, Hands-On Energy Field Work. We're doing a whole series of things as part of that particular intensive, so we invite you to join us for that. And then we'll move from that workshop into a 9-day teacher training. And in that 9-day teacher training, it actually is a dual-purpose workshop for people who really want to focus on and understand the forgiveness process just in their own lives. That total 9 days is focused on still point breathing and why is this happening to me again. And then for those who want to teach, it'll be about being supported in processing and learning to move in the direction of being able to teach the work. And those two workshops, the prerequisite for the teacher training is Why Is This Happening to Me Again. So if you've done the Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive, you qualify to be able to do teacher training. If you haven't, then the two workshops together become a 17-day instead of 18 days. It's 17 days because we overlap a day. And so there's a 17-day teacher training. That includes the 9-day Y and the 9-day teacher training. And then starting on August 22nd, we'll go into a 16-day Laws of Living. And in that Laws of Living, we'll spend our time focused on looking at the first century Aramaic solutions to this thing called law. And we live in a world that wants to bring us into thinking that law has got something to do with the rule of a superior, you know. Such and such is the superior. They make the rules. I have to follow them, and that's law. Kings make rules, call their rules law, which they have no right to do, and then force people with a gun or a spear or whatever threat they use to comply with that rule. That does not make what they're doing a law. law, it turns out, is not the rule of the superior. It's got nothing to do with the superior. Law is simply understanding, or our way of expressing our understanding of how the universe operates. So law, as opposed to demanding obedience, nothing to obey in the law. It's just understanding how it works. And then harmonizing with how it works, you stop having those avoidable collisions with law. One of my favorite examples is the law of gravity. If you step off a cliff, cancel the thought, and drop 2,000 feet, the law of gravity sustains not even the slightest fracture. You can't break a law. It just happens. It's not what men have made up for us. It just happens. And so if you step off the cliff, no law has been violated. The law of gravity will happen. And at the bottom of the 2,000-foot cliff, cancel the thought again, your bones will break. That's how law works. You don't have liberty to work in an arena where you don't understand the laws of that arena. And because our culture has never taught us the laws by which our mind operates. Who ever taught you that Brahma was a filter in the frontal lobes of your brain that keeps perception on track and tweaks so you get the best output? Who taught you that law? It's a law of the mind. There are laws, the way everything operates, the mind, the emotions, relationships, sexuality, land use, growing food, all of those things. There are ways they work and ways they don't. The laws of the universe require no obedience whatsoever, and there is no punisher to punish you if you violate them. However, if you come into avoidable collision with law, well, the law itself sustains no fracture. You're going to find something gets broken or damaged. And we damage ourselves by rolling around in the universe that they haven't taught us how it works. If the religions had been doing their job all along, as opposed to creating hierarchies of men that can get more and more people into their little fold, if the religions had been following the mandate to teach law, then we'd all know how the universe works. We'd all know how relationships work. We'd know how our own minds work, our own emotions. We'd know how our sexuality works. We'd know how to use our land, and we would not be suffering from the avoidable collision with the law. And so that's the focal point of that course that will start on August 22nd, and it will go through the 6th of September. That's our completion point. Then we get to go up and play with Dr. Kim. Actually, we'll be making a stop in St. Louis. First, we'll be doing some things with Suzanne. In St. Louis, so watch for that as the schedule develops right after, the week after the 6th of September. And then we'll be heading up to be in Woodstock, Illinois. We'll be spending a week at the Union Center there with Dr. Tim and everybody that we get to play with in Woodstock. And from there, we'll head down into Michigan. We're looking at creating some things in and this, on the, not the south side of Chicago, but south of Chicago. And we'll see if that comes together. And then we're heading over to spend some time with Rex and friends and Tony and all the folks that are there. Michelle, we'll be spending time in the Lansing and Grand Rapids area. We'll be speaking at a conference called the Spiritual Unity of Mason Conference, keynoting there in October. So watch for that. Take a look on our website. See what the schedule is all about, and we appreciate having this time to spend with you. And we invite you to give the world just an awesome gift. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's the best gift you can give. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.